Okay, we, we have one more topic left, I think. The conceptual framework.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Hans. So at this meeting, we plan to complete deliberations of the revised conceptual framework. We will present to you the remaining topics, and we will ask you for the permission to ballot. In March, we plan to complete re-deliberations of the updating references exploratory draft. In particular, we plan to discuss potential special transition provisions for rate-regulated activities, and also ask you for permission to ballot the amendments to standards. We plan to issue the revised conceptual framework in second half of this year. If there are no questions on where we are and next steps, I will move to agenda paper 10B. Excellent. So moving on to agenda paper 10B. That paper discusses whether the appendix on cash flow-based measurement techniques should be included in the revised conceptual framework. Just to remind you, the exposure draft proposed that cash flow-based measurement techniques are a means of estimating a measure rather than a measurement basis of its own right. No respondents to the exposure draft objected to that proposal, and a few respondents explicitly supported it. However, a few respondents believe that the appendix should not be included in the revised conceptual framework, and this is because they perceived it to be more practical rather than conceptual. In contrast, one respondent suggested that the appendix should be included and that it should be enhanced and expanded. So we think that the appendix should be included in the revised conceptual framework. We believe that it provides a useful discussion, and if it's not included in the revised conceptual framework, it's not clear where else it can be included. And likewise, we do not propose that the appendix should be expanded or enhanced because we believe it would lead to more complexity. Our recommendation is set out in paragraph 10 of agenda paper 10B. Do you agree with our recommendation to include the appendix on cash flow-based measurement techniques in the revised conceptual framework?
Mary?
A mild objection, and it's, I looked at it again and said some of this is, to me, truly educational, especially the bit A6 to the end, and it just struck me about whether we could have, whether we should pick out some of the key sentences, and I think there are four or five key sentences in here, included in the text of the conceptual framework. It's a single paragraph discussing why cash flow-based measurement techniques are a means to an end rather than an end unto themselves, and then issue this maybe even with a little more if the education team felt necessary as truly education materials that stands alone. I think it is, fundamentally, I agree with your point about we should have a discussion of cash flow-based measurement techniques, saying that they're not a measurement basis in themselves, and explaining how they, you know, some of the factors that are listed in A2 are the things we have to make decisions about in the standard-setting process. But I think, having done a rough cut, we could get to about a third of the length, and that made me say, should we just include it in the main text and not have this but the odd thing is an appendix to the conceptual framework. So that's a thought.
Do we have other appendices to the conceptual framework?
We will have a glossary.
A glossary? Yeah. Well, that's okay. But it's a bit strange to have an appendix to the conceptual framework.
We didn't hear that many sort of objections to it.
Because people don't read it. Appendices. I don't.
Coach the staff.
That's attached to the chapters, okay?
Martin.
Yeah, I agree with Mary, because I think most of that is educational, and especially A6 and 7A, you can read in a statistical educational book, and therefore I think I would prefer to delete it, not appendix for the conceptual framework, but if we have it, I think we should shorten it, some key sentences. But I could really live if we don't have that.
Incoming, I was supporting the staff recommendation, but I'm sensitive to the arguments put forward and happy to support the
project. Try to find an elegant solution, if not, just drop it.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly...
It's not very voluminous, so...
Yeah, we could certainly try and incorporate some of, as Mary said, some of the sort of key suggestions into the main body. But some of the sort of more detailed stuff, which we thought was particularly helpful, so sort of about talking about different types of central estimate, I don't think would fit neatly into the measurement chapter. So we would be losing that. If you're happy with losing that in the conceptual framework, then that's fine. We can do that.
Educational material book.
But we would, yeah.
But I would hand it over, because if people found that helpful, great, let's not take it out of existence. It just isn't
good location.
Yeah.
Can I comment on that? It seems to me the people who might need the education might be some of the people who sit around the board table, having heard some discussion over the years. And I would be worried about relegating it to education material. So the things I'm thinking of particularly are the reminder that expensive value doesn't cover risk, which I've heard many people misunderstand that point, including people around the board table who you would think would know better. And I think some of the discussion of expected value versus most likely outcome, I think we have some confusion in terminology sometimes in the standards, and I think actually having some of that in the conceptual framework might help the board in some of those discussions.
I'm going to make an educational paper for the board.
Steve? I agree, educational material is great, but this is a conceptual framework and it's not providing us with any framework. What is it, how is it helping us?
Well, it's telling you what expected value is for one thing, which the board has dabbled in occasionally.
I think I know that.
Well, you think, yes, but as I said, I've heard many times people say that expected value covers risk.
But we could include all sorts of educational niceties in the framework in that case.
Well, the framework's a tool for the board, really, to help the board, so I think the things we should include...
But give guidance, but not education for the board.
Mm-hmm. It's not spent too much time.
I just want to say, come to this time, it seems quite, you know, annoying to waste time, waste our effort.
Okay. So.
Suspect we probably need a vote.
Yeah. So.
Who agrees?
Who agrees that Appendix A should be retained?
In its entirety or in part?
It's already very short.
Well, I have like A1 and A2. I think they are useful. You know, but
up to A5.
Yeah, up to A5. I think that, you know, so
right.
Your question was from A, you know.
Well, but then it should not be in an appendix, but it should be read into the text. Yeah?
I think Gary was just asking whether that
option would be. My proposal would be that if the staff could read in the
key bits.
Key bits and then forget about the rest, and we'll take care of that in educational material if necessary. Mm-hmm. That would be the best solution.
So who agrees as well? That basis?
Yeah.
Okay.
So with that, moving on to agenda paper 10C. Agenda paper 10C discusses the review for inconsistencies between the revised conceptual framework and existing standard. This paper is for information only. We will ask you whether you are satisfied with the work on the effects in general in agenda paper 10D. So just to remind you that we have already performed a review for inconsistencies leading up to the publication of the exposure draft. And the exposure draft discussed the inconsistencies that we have identified at that stage. And also in the invitation for comments, the exposure draft stated that just because there is an inconsistency between the framework and standards, that does not necessarily mean that the standards will be reconsidered by the board. Many respondents agreed with the approach taken in the exposure draft, and many respondents also suggested that there are some additional inconsistencies other than those already discussed in the exposure draft. In April 2016, we discussed the feedback, and you directed us to perform an analysis of those additional inconsistencies suggested by respondents. You also decided that we will not perform a comprehensive review for inconsistencies between the framework and the standards. We have analyzed those additional inconsistencies suggested by respondents. They are set out in Appendix A for Gender Pay Patent C. In addition, we have also reviewed standards and amendments to standards that have been issued after our previous review. We have not identified any substantive additional inconsistencies other than those that were already discussed in the exposure draft. Do you have any questions or comments on the discussion on gender pay patent C?
I have one. It's on page 9 for comment A5, which is, the staff has analyzed the substance. I think actually the comment summarized in A5 points to me to maybe some imprecision in the drafting that was in the CFED. I agree with the staff that this is not an issue, when you do consolidated, when not, is something that we should not be addressing in the conceptual framework. But I think we have to look again at the drafting that gave rise to the comment, because I think the comment has highlighted some wording inconsistencies that we should look at rather than just saying no further action.
Doc?
Yes, I have two points. One is A22. The A22 talks about the IFRS 9 B4113 about the influence of law, which we discussed in the FICE. And I agree with the staff's responses, but the way staff articulated is not really correct. Staff said that the IFRS 9 considers the substance rather than simply legal form. But if I read IFRS 9, and I think IFRS 9, especially this paragraph, clearly said that it will see the contractual terms and the legal terms on its own would not affect as long as it is not within the contractual term. So therefore, in this sense, in this particular case, I don't think it is not allowed to make a substantial judgment. So therefore, saying that IFRS 9 is substantial, considered substance rather than simply legal form, the explanation is not really correct. We intendedly make it rule basis in IFRS 9. And in this sense, there is some inconsistency with the conceptual framework, but that is the case, simply that. And that is what IFRS 9 is all about. Am I understanding correct?
Well, I think that IFRS 9 does look at the substance of the contractual terms rather than the words in the conceptual, of the contractual terms rather than sort of the words and sort of just the legal framework, if you will. Like, for example, in particular, IFRS 9 tells you that if the contractual term is non-genuine, you do not concede it. So you do look at the substance and at the economics of what is going on under IFRS 9.
Yeah, maybe that's the important part, because in the IFRS 9, it seems like for the instrument E, which is in this particular paragraph, says that, if the contractual terms do not really refer to the legal issues, then you should judge it based on just the contractual terms rather than taking into consideration legal things. So in this particular case, judgment is not really allowed.
I think you're both right in a sense, and I think it's similar to the FICE conversation we had yesterday. Yes. We have to always be very careful, because if I build on the sorts of examples that Yulia is using, we certainly do say in IFRS 9 that particular things shouldn't be considered, and the example is the instrument E. But I think in another case, for example, when we tell people to look at the contractual cash flows and decide whether they're solely payments of principal and interest, we're very clear that you can't just look for the words principal and interest. You need to look at the economics of the cash flows to determine what the nature of them is. So I think we do consider substance in that sense, but we don't. We are very specific in another sense. So I think you're both right, but it's really hard to articulate.
Okay. It's fine, just as long as we discuss and it's clear. And the other thing is A34, which is about the definitions of financial statements. And it's fine, it's clear, but I wonder, it's a bit of strange that the conceptual framework works definition is much more in detail than the standard. Standard looks like conceptual framework, and the conceptual framework definition is much more detailed. I mean, IS1 says just general purpose financial statements is the intended to meet the needs of users who are not in a position to require an entity. And then when it comes to the conceptual framework, it's more specific. It's fine as far as conceptual framework is concerned, and we agreed. However, we are now doing the disclosure initiative. So therefore, if the conceptual framework is like this, are we going to take this definition into the our project in the disclosure initiative? Because simply, it's a bit strange. The conceptual framework is more detailed than the standard.
But do you see there's an inconsistency between the two, which I think is what we're trying to highlight?
There is no inconsistency at all. No. But I'm talking about the detailness. The conceptual framework is more detailed than the IS1. IS1 looks like a conceptual framework.
I think that just reflects the fact that IS1 is an old standard, and so and was developed at a different time. I think the conceptual framework description is probably a better description, and that I think if we did look to revise IS1 in that way, then we'd look to try and align it with
conceptual framework. Okay, so we are going to revise IS1 during the course of disclosure initiative.
We haven't decided what the scope of the disclosure initiative would be in terms of which bits of IS1 we would actually look to revise, but certainly if we did look at that piece of IS1, then we would be looking towards the conceptual framework and seeing if we could align it.
Okay, thank you.
Big work. It's not to for me, you know, it's a different purpose. In some cases, we decide some of the basic concepts we should define in conceptual framework, like asset liabilities and many other OCI and others. And can you say, you know, why OCI seems to explain more detail than any standards? You know, we intentionally feel there is a need. Of course, on the other hand, I agree with you that we should be very careful. You know, we define a relative detail. But by the end, you know, 2 years later, we feel, oh, we made a mistake. We should be careful. I don't worry about the details. The key is whether we feel there's a need to define at relative detail at the conceptual level. But you're right, you know, we should not just finger at an explanation, then finally say that we're wrong.
So if there are no further comments, I move on to Agenda Paper 10D. Agenda Paper 10D discusses the work performed to assess the effects of the revised conceptual framework and asks if you are satisfied with the work performed. So just to remind you, the invitation to comment on the exposure draft stated that the revised conceptual framework will affect the board and standard setting, and that it will also affect repairers when they will apply those new revised standards or when they use revised conceptual framework in developing their accounting policies. Also, as we already discussed, the exposure draft discussed our approach to inconsistencies. Many respondents agreed with the approach taken in the exposure draft. However, some respondents asked the board to perform a more detailed analysis of the effects of conceptual framework on future standard setting. And also some respondents asked the board to perform a more detailed analysis of the effects on repairers. So in April 2016, you discussed the approach to the effects of the revised conceptual framework, and you asked us to perform a more detailed analysis of the effects of new definitions of assets and liabilities and supporting concepts, and you also asked us to perform a more detailed analysis of the effects on repairers and also of additional inconsistencies, as we just discussed. In response to that request, we have tested definitions of assets and liabilities and supporting guidance using 23 illustrative examples, and we discussed those examples with world standard setters and played with yourselves. And as a result of that work, the board decided to make some improvements and clarifications to the discussion of existence uncertainty and also to the discussion of the meaning as a result of past events. We also performed outreach with preparers and accounting firms and analyzed feedback on the updating references exposure draft in order to better understand the effects of the revised conceptual framework on preparers. And again, that work resulted to some changes to the proposals in the references exposure draft. And finally, as we have already discussed, we performed a review for inconsistencies, and we have not identified any additional substantive inconsistencies. The work performed on assessing the effects of the revised conceptual framework will be discussed in the feedback statement. Are you satisfied with the work performed?
That is the case.
In which case, if we could move on to agenda paper 10E. This is another very much a housekeeping exercise. We've already discussed the main comments on the element chapter. Agenda paper 10E simply summarises other comments received which we hadn't covered in previous papers and the staff responses to those comments. Mostly we talk about actually dealing with the comments in drafting and looking at clarifying drafting and wording to make our intentions clearer. There's no specific points that we actually wanted to raise with you on this paper. We have no particular questions for you on this paper, but we'd like to see if you have any comments on the analysis within that paper.
Mary. I had just one on page 6, the example referred to 4.8.B at the top of the page. Apologies, I did not go back and look at the exposure drafting context, but it just made me wonder whether we really needed this example. And I see the point in the staff response to the comment, but if the staff could just look at in drafting whether it is critical for us to have this example in or not, because apparently somebody was raising a comment about something we stated as an example rather than as a point of principle.
We can have this.
Yeah.
Thank you. Page 17, 4.31B. And it says, the 4.31B says the obligation has arisen from past events. In other words, the entity has received the economic benefits. However, the suggestion comments said it should be economic resources rather than benefits, because if you say economic benefits, even if you receive something like a PPE, you haven't actually received benefits yet, because benefits itself created by the PPE or obtaining assets. So therefore, receive is rather than benefit, resources. that is what comment wanted to say. So I'm not quite sure, you know, still keep it's a benefit, it's better drafting, or should we choose the word benefits rather than benefits, something like resources?
I think, and I think in the response what we were trying to capture was the notion that actually it could be a relief from an obligation rather than an economic resource in itself that we would actually obtain. And I think if you yeah. use the term resource, it would be more restrictive of what we were trying to capture yeah. there, but we can certainly have a look at the wording and, again
yeah.
and see.
Yeah, but again, the same thing can be said to the benefits, because if you say simply benefits only, then unless you get the benefit, at the point of time, you just receive the resources. So it would be interpreted in this way. So therefore, we could say either benefits and resources, or benefits or resources, whatever. So simply choose just benefit has some danger of misinterpretation.
Okay. Let's have a look at that in drafting, or we'll come back to you.
Okay. And finally, the due process. Danielle.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Agenda paper 10F, which hopefully now concludes the re-deliberations on the conceptual framework. And the first part of the paper talks about the whole project starting in 2004 when it was a joint project, goes on to the discussion paper, to the ED, and also sets out all key decisions that have been taken since then, and states where we are right now with the tentative decisions. Are there any questions on that part? It's paragraphs 4 to 31. If that is not the case, then I would move on to the first question, actually. Respective paragraphs are paragraph 32 to 59, which set out the mandatory due process steps that the board has undertaken, and the additional non-mandatory due process steps. Mandatory due process steps are, for example, publishing an exposure draft, and optional or non-mandatory steps are, for example, undertaking outreach meetings. We are of the opinion that the board has done enough and sufficient steps, and we would like to ask the board if you agree with the staff conclusion that the board has undertaken all mandatory due process steps and undertaken sufficient non-mandatory steps to be in a position to finalize the conceptual framework.
Does the board agree that it has done a good job?
Yeah.
All day in favour.
Okay, moving on to the second question on re-exposure. The reasons why we do not recommend to re-expose the conceptual frameworks are set out in paragraph 61 to 66. Do you agree with that recommendation?
All in favour.
Okay, moving on to question 3 about the effective date. I would like to point out that we discussed in January the effective date of the conceptual framework for three paras. This question aims at the question whether you are happy that the board and the interpretations committee are starting to use the conceptual framework as soon as it's published.
Is there any other option?
Up to you.
All right.
Okay, then we come to question 4, which is probably the most exciting question for the staff. do you grant us the permission to ballot the conceptual framework?
All in favour.
Thanks very much.
After insurance?
Yes, don't worry.
So who's going to dissent?
Not if you draft liabilities well.
We're going to take that on board.
Nobody's going to dissent.
That was the answer that we wanted to hear. William.
Thank the staff.
Thank you very much.
Task force brought. Well, you still have to do some drafting.
Just a little bit.
We look forward to it. Thank you. So that brings us to the end of this month's deliberations. Also brings us to the end of our cooperation with you, who is for 3 years leading the board, and we thank him for all his efforts and contributions to our work in the last 3 years. So I think we applaud for both you and for the staff for the conceptual framework.